XCast X-Files Podwatch. This is episode 94, and we are talking about the season 9, a couple of the season 9 opening episodes, Nothing Important Happened Today, part 2, and Demonicus. And if you'll recall, when we talked about Empedocles a few days ago, we were quite taken by the notion of evil! And I would say that evil returns for Demonicus, but maybe we should call it, you know, evil, because it's a lot darker. Evil.
And stupider.
Yes, yeah. But we'll get there. We'll get there. I'm Tony Black, your host. And once again, yeah, I'm joined by Darren Mooney.
Hello, how are things?
I would be a lot better, Darren, if I wasn't talking about season 9. I've got to be honest, because we've been dreading this, I think, haven't we, really?
We have a bit. I do appreciate that you split the pain. You didn't structure it so that like people were talking about Nothing Important Happened Today, part 1 and part 2 together. I feel like that was an act of generosity on your part, and I appreciate that.
It's a blessing, really. But let's do it anyway. So Nothing Important Happened Today is the part 2 is the second episode of Season 9, and it aired in November 2001, written by Chris Carter and Frank Spotnitz, and directed by Tony Warmby, who had directed a fair few episodes of Season 8, and a British director, actually, who did things like Coronation Street before he came to the UK as well, which is a little bit random, but there you go. And, yeah, this is the second part of the two-part opener, where...
What happens?
Because what does happen in this? There's a lot of talking. There's a lot of people going into rooms and talking to each other. There's a ship with some experiments
with terrible
going
CGI.
On. Yeah, yeah, it was
terrible CGI. It's like you can tell that they discovered that they did this, that they could do this in like 2001. They're like, we have this technology. It's cutting edge. It will never be any better than it is now. So we might as well use it. And it's just horrible. The opening shot of the teaser to the episode is like the surprise twist at the end is that they're on a ship. But like when you're watching it, it's quite clear from the outset that they're on a ship because it's designed like a ship.
Exactly.
The officer in charge is clearly a member of the Navy
who's called Captain.
What is the big twist at the end of the teaser where it's like, oh my, we're on a boat and it's going fast and we've got a nautical theme, Pashmina, yeah. Afghan. It's just like, and that's the most interesting thing in the episode is how terrible the teaser is.
It's got some really awful dialogue. In like, there's a point where the captain comes up to the bridge and he says, "Prepare to transmit." And he doesn't say anything else. And then he's exogas, "Transmit what?" And then he just walks off. And he doesn't answer him. And then he goes, "Sir, what am I transmitting?" And then you were expecting some really big thing. And then he says, "We're coming in." Doom music. Is that it? Like, I mean, surely there was something better there. I was like, what am I supposed to be getting from this? Am I supposed to, you know, what is going, you know, it's that sums up the entire episode because it's full of, it feels like 10 minutes worth of story or 10 minutes worth of plot that they've basically strung out over 40 minutes. And I say this as somebody who likes this part better than the first part.
Ooh.
Yeah, I do, because there, much as it's quite like overblown, I do like Mark Snow's score in this. I think there's some really good, like, you know, moments of music. I like the fact you see the ridiculous Noel roar back again, even though he's just hilarious now.
And a good head chop and like hand through body as well, like for your sort of like classic creature effects.
Lucy Lawless is fun, you know. So I suppose if you can apply fun to this episode, but it's just so sort of leaden and plodding, and it also, like the first part, it is obsessed with Mulder. It's obsessed with a character who's not in it.
It's not even that it's obsessed with Mulder. It's that it's like it's obsessed with reversing what worked so well at the end of the eighth season. Like the end of the eighth season, you had Mulder and Scully together with a child who was a miracle born of love, right? Which is, that's a great twist, which is it's not a conspiracy, it's not aliens, it's like pure love between Mulder and Scully allowed her to get pregnant. How don't worry about it. You get one of these, like, once every 8 years, you can pull it off. It's very sweet. You know, it gives a nice... Camera pulls back. It's like, okay, we're going to leave them. We're going to, like, let them be... We're going to give them some privacy as well, like that wonderful tracking shot at the end of Existence. But then, like, Nothing Important Happens Today, Part 2 in particular, is like, oh my God, what if William is actually a secret government experiment? Despite the fact that we spent a good portion of the 8th season worrying about that and ruled it out. It's like, no, yeah. We are so desperate to figure out a way to get this back in. And then, like, later in the season, they go, oh, okay, maybe, what if William isn't a government secret government experiment? What if he's instead the chosen one? And it's just, first of all, pick one. Second of all, don't yeah. pick one, because you don't need it. It's just horrible. And it's like, even the bit where, like, Lucy Lawless says Shannon McMahon, right, who shows up, and she's served with Doggett. She has a connection with Doggett, and she's in theory looking for Doggett, right? But it turns out she's only using Doggett to get to Mulder and Scully and William. Yeah, and it's just really terrible plotting that, like, and it does the thing that happens a lot in the 9th season, where you sideline Doggett and Reyes and sort of treat them as, like, chauffeurs and as messengers, as, like, errand boys for, like, Mulder, who's not in the show, Scully, who is clearly on her way out of the show and the writers have no idea what to do with her, and William, who is a baby and therefore cannot act. And you just have this horrible thing that's set up here and plays for the rest of the season. It's a bad decision, and it's a bad decision that leads to other bad decisions that just keeps going in, like, some sort of weird refractal infinite sort of, like, bad decision tree.
Yeah, yeah, it really is, you know, as well, affecting characters like Skinner. You know, Skinner, throughout this, he's just so sort of, he's so wet all through this episode. He's just like, oh, Dana, I've got something I need to tell you. He sounds stilted, he sounds like he needs a poo. You know, all the way through this Skinner. And I'm like, oh my God, stop making really good characters like Skinner just really wet and damp and just going, oh, Dana. You know, it's just like, oh, you know, just stop it. And I'm all through this episode, I'm just going, stop it. Just
I have this image of you pointing at the TV, like, as if I am scolding it. Yeah.
And this isn't even the worst. I mean, this isn't even the worst part of season. It gets worse.
No, which is astounding. Yeah. Like, you would think this is the worst season premiere the show has produced. And I don't like The Blessing Way, but this is the worst season premiere the show has produced. And, like, it's just horrible. And you can tell, like, the sidelining of Skinner, right? The making, like, the mischaracterization of him, the awkwardness around him, is because the show is clearly positioning Kirsch as the new Skinner figure. Because this is the episode where it's revealed that Kirsch maybe isn't such a horrible human being. Maybe he's secretly helping the X-Files. And it's like, you did that arc with Skinner. And not only did you do that arc with Skinner, you did it several times with Skinner. And Mitch Pileggi was great in it. But you can't do it again because you already have Skinner. And if you're doing this with Kirsch, then you have to figure out something else to do with Skinner. And what you're doing with Skinner is awful. So please don't do that.
Yeah, and you've also got Folmer now, who is essentially playing an early-ish Skinner kind of internal antagonist role. You've got Kirsch, who's now become sort of the new Skinner, in a way, or he's edging towards the new Skinner. And then you've got Skinner not even being Skinner anymore. What are you doing to me?
I like your theory of Nothing Important Happened Today is like ghosts of Skinner, past, present, and future. It's like, you'll be visited by the three ghosts of Skinner. One of them will look like the guy from The Princess Bride.
I have to say, though, I do quite like that final scene between Doggett and Kirsch. I quite like the connection to the, you know, the King, is it King George, I think it
King
was.
George who, III, yeah. King George III, yeah. King George
III. Yeah, and that's a nice little thing, you know, and explains the title, even though the title is hilariously ironic, I think, because the title is basically summing up the fact that, yeah, nothing's happening, basically.
Tempt fate. Yeah,
it's like, yeah, it does.
What are the people on the internet going to say about this episode? I wonder.
It's got a couple of things in it I do like. You know, I like the whole Noel Raw trying to squash Doggett's head, you know, and things like that. I like the sound of his bones starting to break.
His headless corpse, like, impaling Shannon McMahon on his hand, which is something, it's ridiculous, it's absurd, but at least it has some life in it.
Yeah, and the scene with the lone gunman I enjoy as well. That's a fun little moment with them as well.
I thought that was a bit too much. I thought, like, that was a stage where you're reaching the sort of cartoonish level where it's like, we bluffed our way into FBI headquarters because we don't have broadband. Oh, how hilarious.
But it's few and far between. The rest of it is just people going into rooms, talking, saying things that people don't say. You know, use dialogue that is so forced and so strung out. And Scully acting like a wet blanket all the way through as well, going, "My baby, my baby, my baby." It's just, oh my God, what happened? What happened to this cool kick-ass investigating agent? And this is my problem later on in the season as well.
Is this the first "my baby"? I know she doesn't, it's not like "my baby" exclamation mark, but it's like, I have to find out about my baby. So is this the first time in the season Anderson has to do that thing where Scully's like panicked about William?
And
you can tell
so.
She's trying, and it's just it's sad to watch.
It is sad to watch because, you know, it's just, I mean, for all the season 8 story, I think I've said this in other podcast, in other episodes, but for all the season 8 story is good with William, once he's born, they have no idea what to do with him. And I think I sum this up in when we talk about William later in the season, which has already been recorded, the episode William, which is terrible. And that encapsulates really that they had no idea what to do with this baby. And this episode, you know, I like the whole thing about him turning his crib, you know, with his mind. That's creepy. That's good. That's an interesting little thing. But that's about as far as it goes with William. That's the only thing with it I found interesting. The rest is like, you are just making Scully into a ball, a character. All she does is pine after Mulder and worry about you, you know. And she's better than that.
You have an Emmy award-winning actor on the show, and what you've done is you've treated her as a surrogate for A, an actor who no longer wants to be in the show, has made it clear he's not coming back, and B, a baby who cannot act. So you like, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I don't mean like William, like the actor playing William is a terrible baby actor. I just mean you can't give a baby a plot line because babies can't act.
I just want him to be like Stewie Griffin, basically. Yeah, that's what I want.
But like you've taken Gillian Anderson, you basically said Scully has no agency. What she does instead is a nexus between Mulder and William, and it's just horrible. It's a terrible choice. It's a terrible, terrible choice.
It's rubbish. It's rubbish. And most of this episode is rubbish, and it sort of establishes what we can expect from season 9, which has the occasional bright spot. I'd be lying if I said it didn't. It does, but especially the mythology. The mythology is a sea of this kind of tediousness all the way through. So
a computer generated sea, even.
Yeah. Yes. Mostly,
not even like
yeah.
a real sea. Not even like a good sea. This is like a sea at the start of Nothing Important Happened Today Part 2 sea.
Terrible sea on a ship that everybody knew was a ship. It's rubbish. So yeah, terrible start. Terrible start. Next one though is I would say, and we're gonna disagree on this one. I would say it's slightly better, Daemonicus. Which
well, I mean, that's like being asked to pick your favorite strain of hepatitis. It's like. It's not a good answer in this situation, Tony.
It's true. I've never had to do that. But if I do, it's going to be comparable to this. This aired in December 2001. Written and directed by Frank Spotnitz. And it sees Doggett and Reyes investigating quite a macabre, satanic-linked murder while Scully is teaching at Quantico. And finding themselves faced with a case that seems to be demonic possession, but then starts to go into this weird sort of chess game plotting that, I mean, let me qualify this. I like Daemonicus from the fact, I like some of the ideas in it. I like some of the way it's shot. I think Frank Spotnitz does an interesting job. But I think it's really, how the best to explain this? I think it kind of misses a massive point, and it does something that the X-Files at its worst does. And it did this with Scully early on. All through this episode, it makes no sense for Doggett to be acting the way he is. All through. I don't understand why, when faced with a man vomiting gallons of ectoplasm, that he still can turn around and go, "There's nothing to this! There's nothing weird going on!" It's like, Doggett, you've just seen a man vomit his body weight in ectoplasm. What are you doing? So that encapsulates why this isn't a terrible one for me, but it's flawed.
Flawed is one word for it I would choose. It's...
Go on, then. Savage away.
It's the show's stupid Hannibal Lecter episode. Because it's clearly meant to exist in the framework of shows like, say, you know, like Millennium the Carter worked on, but obviously stuff like, say, Grotesque, Beyond the Sea, you know, sort of Paper Hearts. It's you're
evil.
It's about evil, but it's also about like your characters taking on like a really clever serial killer who's trapped behind bars. And you have this sort of stuff where like James Remar, who is a good actor, like he's genuinely good in other things, and he's actually not half bad here, except again he's stuck playing stupid Hannibal Lecter. And this is the issue with the episode, is that like it's set up as a chess game. And dear God, does it hammer home that point. You get that horrible, the checkerboard on the floor. Yeah. You have, like, the slightly subtler and actually quite reasonable, like, checkerboard through glass windows, which is quite a clever sort of layout of a scene. But, like, the checkerboard on the floors, the idea of, like, the game, the opening with the game of Scrabble, stuff like that. And, like, at the end, you have, like, Doggett deducing that this is an escape because the victims spell the word Demonicus. And, like, here's how they spell Demonicus. The first two victims, if you put their first names together and put an and between them, you get DAE, right? Which is not how anybody hides a message. The second victim, if you take her first name and you take the first four letters of it, which is a rather arbitrary amount of letters to take from an arbitrary name, you get money, right?
Yeah.
And then for the last three letters, you get cuss. From Officer Custer, Custer being his last name, and three letters being smaller than four letters, or two first name initials joined with an and in the middle. It's like, that is the level of sense that this episode makes, or that the effort that it puts in to building its cunning, clever serial killer plan. Like, I don't walk away from Doggett's little lecture at the end where he underlines the word Demonicus and explains in painstaking detail how much careful work Professor Joseph Cobol put into his evil plan. I look at it and I go, Doggett, I realize, you know, you weren't very helpful for the rest of the episode, and maybe you're trying a little bit hard to make up for that now. Like, maybe it's just Demonicus.
Yeah.
you know, maybe you're seeing patterns where they don't exist, or you're reading arbitrarily into it. Because if, like, that is not a pattern. That is a random assemblage of letters that you took from some of the victims in this episode. And the rest of the episode is structured very much like that. Like, Joseph Cobol is capable of manipulating and controlling people around him. And it's on, like, the episode, you're right when he vomits his own body weight in ectoplasm, which would suggest it's a supernatural thing. So maybe it actually is demonic possession. Even though if it were demonic possession, why would you stage it so as to suggest it was demonic possession unless you're trying to throw everybody off the case? I don't really care. But he's able to manipulate and control even the guards in the institution where he's released. He's able to convince Officer Custer to dress up as himself so he can escape at the climax. With all of that in mind, like, and Doggett suggests, like, why wouldn't he just use the guards to slip out and escape and have Custer replace him in the institution? Doggett's like, well, he needed to get away before people realized that he hadn't really gotten away. And you're like, well, this seems like a very convoluted way of doing that when he could have just, like, walked out the door and, like, had a good 3 or 4 days where Custer sat in his cell.
It feels like... it's the kind of, like, pusher power, isn't it, in a way?
Yeah.
And Pusher would have... that's exactly what Pusher did. He just sort of, you know, left someone sitting in a cell, whatever, and he's gone. Like, what... Yeah, if he's got that sort of pusher power, almost... I know that's not... It's not a sequel to Pusher or anything, but, you know, it's... Yeah, it's just such a convoluted... Like you said, I think... Bad Hannibal Lecter, stupid Hannibal Lecter is a good analogy for this, because it is that whole thing of Frank Spotnitz, who is a good writer.
And yeah, I like Spotnitz.
I like Spotnitz, but in this case, I think he takes the kernel of an idea, trying to do a bit of a sort of, you know, Thomas Harris kind of thing with a little bit of, you know, the kind of millenniumistic stuff, and really make a story that, A, when you unpick it, doesn't make a lick of sense, and B, really doesn't do Doggett any favours at all, you know, because the whole idea of this is it's trying to establish the new status quo with Reyes being essentially the new sort of Mulderish character who can sort of see things. Although in this, it almost feels like she's got a bit of the Frank Black thing going on as well at times.
So, well, she can sense evil and Doggett can sense it too.
Right, yeah, exactly. So you've got that, which they don't seem very convinced with Reyes in, and she just spends most of the episode wandering around going, what's going on? What's happening? And then Doggett is running around going, it's not nothing, nothing's going on, you're all fools. And then Scully's basically just third wheel in the background doing an autopsy, you know, having the students take the mick out of her and thinking, what am I still doing in here? What is the point of this now?
Well, that's you know. Another thing with the episode, is the episode is clearly, in theory, meant to be a Doggett and Reyes episode, and that, like, it's a serial killer case, so Doggett can work it, right, because he's a former cop and he does this sort of rational stuff. It involves demonic possession, because that's Reyes's, like, ball to play with. So in theory, this should be an episode specializing in the two of them. But then you have this weird thing where the show won't let go of Mulder and is still fixated on Scully. So for example, Cobalt, who discovered all this on the internet, which I hear they have on computers now, is like, by the way, I hear you don't have like Mulder's easy charm. But you even have like the show struggling to figure out what to do with Scully, because obviously Anderson had signed an extension on her contract at the start of the 8th season in order to get a raise to bump her up so her salary would be equivalent to that of Duchovny. But basically, she's here because she's mandated to be here by contract, and the writers have no idea what to do. So she's teaching a class, which, by the way, and I can't take credit for this. This is somebody on Twitter came up with this when I pointed out this. But it's basically, I would be all in for a spin-off of The X-Files where Scully teaches a college class in Quantico about investigative techniques that is called How to Get Away with Mulder. So that's not my gag, to be absolutely clear. That's not my gag, but it's a great one. It's a really great gag.
Very good.
But like, the show can't...
Kudos to whoever came up with that. Yeah.
Whoever you are on Twitter, well done on that one.
Well done, well done.
But yeah, there's a sense the show has no idea what to do with Scully. So she's teaching, but then she's brought back to be a hostage at the climax of the episode. And it's really messy and it's really clumsy. And there's a sense like the 9th season would just have been better if Fox had said, look, we know we signed an extension for Anderson at the start of the 8th season in order to give her the raise so she could get paid roughly the same as Duchovny. But we realize that it's not a good idea to have Anderson around without Duchovny, so we're going to cut them both free, and the show is going to be have the freedom to do what it wants. But Scully sort of becomes an albatross around the show's neck in the 9th season. You see that with Demonicus, where, like, in the standalone terms, where standalone episodes now have to figure out how to incorporate Scully into a show where she's supposedly, like, working in an academic capacity, but somehow has to be relevant to the plot because she's Gillian Anderson, and Gillian Anderson is awesome and has won an Emmy and so deserves to be, like, she's basically, she's functionally the lead on the show because she's the character that people are going to tune in for. But in terms of, like, actual plot function, she should be appearing in maybe 4 episodes in a season max. Yeah. And you have this weird dynamic and push and pull, and Demonicus just sort of, like, sets up what will be a horrific... A horrific car crash of a season, in those terms.
It really, really is. These two first two episodes. I don't think we've tore into episodes in any way like this before.
I'm sorry, all the pod watches we've done. Sorry. I like James Remar is good, and Robert Patrick's good, and Annabelle Gish is trying. Like, I mean, she's not giving good material, but like... Yeah, and like, Spotnitz is an okay director. Like, this is his directorial debut. And, like, in fairness, 9/11 happened in the middle of it, so I can understand why people weren't, like, why the episode maybe doesn't have as much focus or tightness as it would otherwise, because when that happens in the middle of a production cycle, there's, you know, you've got more important things to worry about, to be honest. So, like, I can forgive it for not being great, but in terms of just, it underscores a lot of what I think are the issues with the 9th season going forward.
Yeah. 100%. Much as I prefer Demonicus to Nothing Important Happened Today, yeah, I think your hepatitis analogy fits very well. Yeah, so, that's the first... two of the first episodes of Season 9 done. Unfortunately, there's still a fair few to go, but stick with us because we'll get there. We're nearly there. We're nearly at the end.
Some of them are good.
So, yeah, some of them are okay. Some of them are all right. And then we can get to things like Mulder and Scully Meet the Weir Monster and Babylon. I can't wait to even listen to that episode. I'm not even on it. Until we're back, we're going to be back in Season 9 together, I think one last time. So until we are, Darren, until you're back on the show, which I think is tomorrow, where can we find you?
You can find me online at Twitter at Darren_Mooney. You can find me at the movie blog with a 0 instead of an 0 in movie. I also host the 250, which is a podcast that's available on Stitcher, iTunes, wherever good podcasts are sold. And I have a book out, actually, which is Opening the X-Files from McFarlane Press. They've been very generous. It's basically a history of the X-Files, almost a biography of the TV show, I would hope, that kind of tries to put it in a cultural context. But you can buy it online from Amazon or whatever, but you can also order it into your local library as well, if you want to support your local library.
Fantastic. Please do, guys. It's a terrific book, so make sure you get your hands on that. We can be found at the X_cast on Twitter, on Facebook, in the X-Fast, I don't know what that is. That's the Flash spin-off we're doing. The X-Cast basement, and the on Facebook with our page. So look us up, And tomorrow, Darren will be back talking about 4D and Lord of the Flies with Baz Greenland. And you're looking at our schedule, Darren, you're on a lot of Season 9. You know, what did you do to deserve this? I'm really not sure.
Yeah, and you can tell from how I talked about Demonicus how much I love Season 9. I mean, just the warmth just radiates from me. No, I get to talk about some really good episodes. And I mean, tomorrow I'm a lot more enthusiastic because 4D, I think, is legitimately a very good, like, just shy of great episodes. And I mean,
yeah,
I think
it's better.
It is a lot better. And when you break it down, actually, when you go into chunks of two episodes, like generally in the ninth season, you hit a chunk where one episode is, you know, at least on the good side of not bad. And then the other episode is on the bad side of, like, abominable. But there's always that not bad episode to get you through.
Yeah, positivity. Let's keep that going. So we're going to need it as we carry on. So yeah, join us tomorrow, guys, for another XCast Pod Watch. But until then, remember, trust no one.